Okay, let's see. We're going. Welcome to the fourth Adam Sandler podcast with Justin and Chris.
I'm Justin.
We recorded about a half hour of a secret episode
that
fucking crashed. So we'll try to remember what we said. It was all the most heartfelt and funny. We made funny jokes.
Oh, it was good.
We had very heartfelt moments. We did I remember you burst into a song. You actually did Danny Boy, which I thought was amazing. Just homage to I'm not sure why you did it,
all falsetto too. It felt really
but
good.
Luckily we didn't talk about the movie, because we don't talk about the movie on our podcast. We
just started getting to that
so thank God that we hadn't said anything important, like our true feelings towards this movie, or really heartfelt tributes to cast members,
nothing.
What is this
thank God we don't have to retrace any really intense stuff.
That's okay, we'll go. All right, what is this movie? This movie's called The Week Of. It's an Adam Sandler movie. It stars Chris Rock, Rachel Dratch, Steve
that's
Buscemi,
right.
And some other people. And
off to a good start. Is this verbatim? Do you write out? I think we talked about this before.
Yeah.
I think you do write everything out.
In this movie, Chris Rock plays Corby Cortese, who is a surgeon, and Adam Sandler plays Kenny Lustig, who is a father. They're both fathers, as a matter of fact.
I think he does some kind of like construction stuff. Because there's that hotel that he was working, did some construction or consulting on, but it's not enough to make him very much money. He's a middle class, kind of lower middle class kind of guy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But Chris Rock is not. He's a very high flying surgeon. He has a lot of money, and that's an important thing about this podcast.
Money.
This movie, which is that.
We need money.
We need more money. Double shift, man. I already worked a half hour.
That's true. Yeah.
About this movie, which is that Adam Sandler is trying to pay for his daughter's wedding. His daughter is getting married to Chris Rock's son. Chris Rock is kind of estranged from his family, but he has a lot of money, so he kind of tries to buy his way, just like stay in the family just through using his money. But his money, and
I really like how you say that.
And Adam Sandler is he doesn't have a lot of money, but he's very involved in his family, so he's trying to throw the wedding. All sorts of things are, he's cutting some corners, all sorts of things are falling apart. So that was one thing that we talked about.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing. And you did that so much better. I think knowing the characters' names is always a great start. And so it was nice that we had that trial run where we had to be like, and I think Chris Rock is in it, and he plays a character of some kind. He's definitely doing things as like a persona. It's not Chris Rock. I think one of the things I really liked about this movie, in terms of just thinking through the characters and the casting, one of the casting decisions was Adam Sandler's the plot of the movie. If you just said this, please let me know. I feel just traumatized, and I'm still dealing with the fact of my computer crashing. But the plot of the movie is Adam Sandler doesn't want any help from Kenny or from Chris Rock's character paying for the wedding, but that means he has to cut a lot of corners, and so this causes a lot of conflict between he and his wife. And what also causes conflict between he and his wife is that she constantly wants to call up Chris Rock and Chris Rock's ex-wife. Chris Rock's ex-wife. And just talk and just get to know them more. And this embarrasses Kenny, and he doesn't want her to do it. So they have a lot of arguments. But I love that they chose Rachel Dratch as his wife. And I was talking about the fact that, but should we keep referencing the fact that this happened before and we're doing it again? Forget that, and here we go. Watch this.
Assume that.
So one of my favorite things about the film is this casting choice of Rachel Dratch, because I think in a lot of the Adam Sandler films that we've watched, especially recently, he's often cast opposite a non-comedic female lead. So in the case of Jennifer Aniston, who's very funny but not really a comedian, same with Drew Barrymore, or more obviously like Selma Hayek or Jennifer Hudson, we have Adam Sandler as kind of the comedic center of the film with this well-known lead. But I thought it was so great to have Rachel Dratch there because their comedic energy can play off of each other, and at least that's the hope. You just have kind of a more enjoyable comedy to watch there, because it's not just one person kind of performing the funny man. And then I think one of the reasons that was made possible is that Chris Rock is the other lead, that they actually are able to do that because they don't need an A-list actress. They have an A-list actor playing the counterpart.
Right, that was how they were able to get around it, which made me wonder about, like, how much is the studio for, like, previous movies? Like, oh, you have to be with Selma Hayek, or, oh, you have to be with somebody. Yeah. Like, they're treating it like a James Bond movie kind of thing, where he's, like, with a new woman in every movie. I mean, not that Adam Sandler plays the same character, or does he? We are now crossing. No,
yeah, I'd forgotten what it was. but, that was my cue, sorry. Yeah.
But like, they kind of treat it like that, like, oh, and it's like, why not do it almost like, but where I'm kind of coming from is like, okay, he's got this ensemble that probably more notably the guys, but there are like reoccurring women who are like SNL alumni and stuff that appear in these movies, like Rachel Dratch is one of them. So like, I think it's great that they just for this one were like, yeah, be with one of the ensemble, like you have this recurring ensemble, let's draw on that.
What if we tried to make this movie funnier? Isn't that a crazy thought, Adam Sandler?
Like,
you know, have other funny people in it. Yeah, for sure. Which I guess is kind of a mean thing to say, given that Grown Ups did have five separate comedians in the movie. But it could have been even funnier if Rachel Dratch had been one of the wives. See, I think she was probably one of my favorite choices for the film. I think another one is Jim Barone is an actor who played Uncle Seymour. It was his only role. He was actually a double amputee due to diabetes. He lost both of his legs. And when they were doing a casting call for the role of Uncle Seymour, an older uncle who has lost both his legs, somebody at the hospital where Jim Barone was I think staying or convalescing actually said, like, I think you need to apply for this, you're a really funny guy and I think you'd be perfect for it, and he ended up getting the role for it, and I think he does a great job. It's hard to explain exactly what it is, but there was just a moment for me where I realized this guy is like, can act.
Right.
He comes actually from a family of actors. I thought that was kind of cool that all of his siblings were the ones who had kind of pursued acting or the performing arts or whatever, and he had never been that interested in it, but then ended up kind of this gig fell into his lap and it worked out.
Yeah. And Jim Barone, who also it looks like he did pass away, but he was a double amputee with diabetes. He was 57, so he's playing someone much older in the movie. But I'm just looking at this news article. This is from myrecordjournal.com. I don't know what that is, but that was what I was reading. And one of the things I liked about this article, too, is just, like, he would ask people that would come to visit him, have you seen this movie? Which, I don't know. It's just endearing. And, it's fun. I don't know.
That's one of your big pickup lines anyway, isn't it? Have you seen this Adam Sandler movie? Cause I do a podcast about it.
It's true. I did it.
You got to check out this episode.
Yeah.
It's a little on the long side, but trust me, it's good.
Yeah. I do ask people if they have listened to this podcast, incessantly. Usually Cynthia, and she says, "Yeah,
yeah." I told you I did.
Asking me that.
Oh, sorry, I just didn't see your notes yet on the film on the episode. What you thought about it? So I assumed you had stopped listening.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
I think one of the things I love about Uncle Seymour's character, he's a diabetic, and he's lost both of his legs in the film for that reason. But he was also a World War II veteran, and unbeknownst to Kenny, he picks up Uncle Seymour from the airport, and Uncle Seymour's son, played by Steve Buscemi, has only packed his military uniform. And so they're all getting dressed up, trying on their outfits to make sure they fit okay, and they realize, oh no, Kenny's son is playing a baseball game, so they have to go and go to the baseball game in their outfits, which means Uncle Seymour is in his war outfit sitting in his wheelchair at the baseball game, and everyone assumes that he is a double amputee from World War II. And so everyone starts coming up and thanking him for his service. The announcers come on overhead and thank him for his service. At one point, Adam Sandler's son is not being put in because he's not a good baseball player, and everybody starts chanting for him to be put in after they find out that he is the great nephew of the World War II veteran. And it's you know, this funny buildup of like, let's see how far this bit can go, let's see how extreme this can be. And there's one moment in the baseball game when a kid gets hit with the bat and falls over, and he's like, seems unconscious, he's kind of moaning, and his coach runs over to check on him. And he's like, hey, Matt, you okay, buddy? Well, hang on one second. And he runs over to the fence, puts his hand up to the fence where Uncle Seymour is sitting, and he says, thank you so much for your service. And this, you know, obviously no one would ever do that in their right mind. That is such an extreme form of patriotism that would make you forego taking care of this kid that you're supposed to be coaching to go and thank a veteran for their service. But I liked it because it was one of those moments of taking a comedic moment to its extreme and kind of breaking through just the comedic bit and actually offering some kind of social commentary. Like, it felt like it was commenting on the way that we think about veterans and the kind of obsessive way that we can defer to them at times. And it was a really perfect moment. Probably my favorite moment in the film was that little tiny moment there.
Yeah. And yeah, and I feel like this movie had more, it did have a few moments that were more like, more observed, I guess, in terms of the comedy than some of the other, like, it also had really like, what would you call it? Just like, there's two, like, I don't know, but there's a few moments that felt really observed.
Well, I feel like a lot of the Happy Madison movies are really boneheaded, and they like that. They want them to be kind of boneheaded, that is a form of humor. But
yeah,
I think some of the humor in this was more observed and more
a little lighter touch, maybe some of it. Like, I mean, I'm sure that there. Anybody who actually watched this movie is like, what?
Oh, this is still boneheaded for sure. This movie is really boneheaded. Like, things fall on Uncle Seymour's head repeatedly throughout the film for no reason. Like, people are always like tripping on wires and like, oh, why was the dehumidifier up on that top shelf? Well, now it's on his head.
Sure. But but there are a few of those like quieter moments. One that you said you liked. Who was it? Were you talking about Katie Hartman?
When did I say this, Chris? What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, when we talk about these movies all the time. Yeah,
that's true. We are on the phone the whole time we're watching them.
Like, oh, did you see that?
I just watched it with you. That was fun. That was fun. Yeah, so Katie Hartman plays Robin. And I thought this was like one of the coolest character dynamics in the whole movie, because you have Adam Sandler's daughter is the one getting married. She is home. She just graduated college. I think she's 22 or 23, getting married. And she's brought several of her college friends back with her to be bridesmaids. But her maid of honor is Robin, her childhood friend. And so there's this really interesting juxtaposition between the childhood friend who knows the bride better than anybody possibly could, but who also hasn't had the same kind of college experience as the bride or her bridesmaids. And it leads to just like this really interesting constant sense of imposter syndrome on Robin's part, it seems. She's like constantly feeling a little bit left out or like she hasn't done quite enough. And like at one point they're talking about how the wedding party's going to come out. And Robin's like, I thought we would play Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. And they love it, but they love it ironically. And Robin likes it genuinely. And she's constantly just kind of like, oh God, not really sure. And giving a lot of looks and pensive looks and frustrated looks throughout the movie. I kind of compared her to like a more subdued Melissa McCarthy. Is it Melissa McCarthy or Melissa McCartney?
Man, I don't know.
I'm going to say McCartney. I'm going to say Melissa McCartney.
We should have. God damn it. And we had.
All right, let's start over. You know what? Here, let's trash this. We'll start over. Third time's a charm.
Actually, let's save it right there, actually, because that's
yeah,
perfect.
Actually, great idea. So now we're
cooking,
feeling
man.
Better.
Okay,
yeah.
We're feeling better.
And we can
better.
Just cut all this
we
stuff
panicked.
Out. You want to mark that this happened at. What'd you say?
Fuck, I'm way off, though. Like, I actually saved all the old stuff, too, just in case I want to record. I might go back in and record your parts as you.
Oh,
and
that'd
just
be,
try to, yeah.
That'd be really, really good,
yeah.
I think.
Hi, I'm Justin. I thought the movie was great because I'm stupid.
How can you do my Justin impression? How did you do my Justin impression?
Because all of those.
Hey guys, I'm Justin. I'm here for the movie. I'm talking about Adam Sandler.
Yeah, you only ever upload the ones that are of you being me. So that's all anyone ever hears.
Yeah.
So we're at 17 minutes in. Wow.
Okay.
We got a stretch to go, but that's good to know so that you can cut out minutes 15 through 17 or whatever it was. Yeah,
not a chance. All right.
No way. No way, Jose.
So,
no, there are a few cameo. I mean, you actually. Why don't you tell us about the magician? Because I know I just have a feeling you've got that twinkle in your eye. I can tell you're feeling the magic still.
Okay. Well, anyway, so in this movie, one of the things. So I have a lot to say about this movie. Actually, I'd love to get to it at some point, but. I just felt like it was a little more observed, like there were more moments that were a little bit realer in this movie, and one of them was that, like, I don't even, one of them was that there's a magician in it.
And that felt so real.
I just thought, that's fucking cool, man. I thought he was real. But he wasn't. No, there's something about the magician character that I felt like was, like, I did think he was real, and then we were looking it up, and it's Joel Marsh Garland. He's an actor. So, but I felt like, so, like, in these movies, like, in so many of the Happy Madison movies, like, it's not, most of it's not based on an observation, and I think, and this one felt like.
Like an observation about people,
about
and how
human
people
beings and
are,
how people are,
and how they
yeah.
behave in the world.
And
yeah.
I just thought, like, the guy did such a great job at this role because there's this. Now, maybe I'm not giving. Like, in my head, magicians. I guess, like, a caricature of a magician would just be. There's this sort of. This gravitas that they try to bring to things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, ah, welcome. Well, have a seat, please. Please have a seat. Now, the things you might see today, they might be amazing. They might be spectacular. But remember, it's all a show. Like, it just stuff like.
Or
that.
Is it? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Magic isn't real. Just remember. Or yeah, like I don't know. I can't quite do it again. That's why I don't even fucking try. But. The redo impressions that I've done once. I'm a one impression person, and the second
same
time
here.
Sucks. I know. Like, but I was trying. But there was something that I thought was very, like, he brings this gravitas. He brings this little bit of pretension, but he's also like, but I'm just a magician. It's all just a show. Remember, folks, it's just entertainment. What's that behind your ear? Flowers. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
I think one of the things is,
yeah,
he's not. I feel like in any other Happy Madison movie, we would see a magician, and then he
yeah.
would also, like, fall through a table.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, his suit would get caught on fire while he was trying to perform something.
Yeah.
The humor is in that observation about how seriously people can take their jobs, regardless of what their job happens to be. But, like, this guy who's a magician and is getting hired for a wedding is taking it seriously like he's opening for Siegfried and Roy or something. You know, it's a very serious thing, and that commitment to his craft is funny.
Right.
Because it's probably not paying off. I mean, I can relate.
Yeah, and I think that they also, there might be a moment where he's like, ah, yes, and then we'll have karaoke. Like, I think it's the gravitas, but then they'll like remind you, like down to earth, and also like I don't know.
Well, he has this. He does have this other great moment. You know, the whole thing with Journey. It's hilarious, and like the college kids get it. But then the magician gets it too. Like they mention Journey, and he's like, "Oh, I love it. Hi, camp." And it was just like, okay, everyone understands the irony. Of, you know, everyone appreciates this like ironic choice, but for a Robin, poor Robin, it is a sincere choice and she loves it. And yeah, I thought that was great. There was one other character I wanted to mention.
Is Schmeagol taking over the show?
I don't know. I heard that too. It might be that Robert Smeagol is the director of the show.
God.
And he also plays a doctor. He has a cameo as a doctor in the film as well. And it might also be that I really wanted to do Covert Watch, and Alan Covert wasn't in this one either, and so I just had to figure out a way to do it. Yeah, he was a producer.
He was a producer.
And I was hoping that he was... Uncle Seymour in disguise, but it turned out that he was not. It turned out that that was Jim Barone. So, but yeah, Robert Smeagol, who I think is maybe most well known as the comic The Insult Dog guy,
right?
And has been involved in several Adam Sandler films, but this is his first time directing one, right?
Yes, this is his first time, but he did write the he did write and like. Create, I think, the Hotel Transylvania characters.
Oh, all of them.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, he wrote Frankenstein.
Damn.
And then he, under his stage name, or under his pen name, Mary Shelley, then he faked that it was an old book. No, he wrote, like, the scripts, and he, like, created the concept and stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, Robert Smeagol, and I have some things to say about him, too, but carry on. With the cameo.
Or yeah, he's in it. All right, back to you, Chris. So one of the things, and I was like, okay, this is his directorial debut, and one of the things I noticed about this movie as I'm watching it, I don't know if you noticed it too, it doesn't look like a Happy Madison movie.
Yeah. Oh, I noticed that for sure.
The shots are way more...
Yeah.
I don't have the language for this, but the shots seem... far more thought out. The lighting seems really thought out. There are like sustained shots on people's faces. There's a kind of a sort of handheld quality every now and then to it. And I, as I'm watching, just kind of amazed by how much better this film looks. And I think that plus the kind of like observational comedy that happens throughout makes it feel like it couldn't possibly be a Happy Madison film. Like it almost feels like another Spanglish, right? It almost feels like an Adam Sandler movie outside his Happy Madison.
I wasn't
Madison
sure
production.
What we were getting when I first started watching it, because I didn't really... Yeah. I guess I saw that it was Happy Madison, but yeah. My very first note in my own notes is that it almost feels like a real movie. Another little directorial choice is there... This might not be true for the whole movie, but it's at least true for the whole first part of it, is that there's no... background music except for what the characters are listening to. So most of the time there's no background music, but then it will play. I think there's a lot of, like, every time Adam Sandler gets in his car, he's listening to a Billy Joel album, maybe scenes from an Italian restaurant. Is that one of his
if memory serves, that sounds right.
Yeah, anyway, he's listening to a Billy Joel album, and so like it'll show him driving and he'll get to hear the snippet of a Billy Joel song. And, like, I'm not sure if it carries that over through the whole movie, but that was definitely the first part of the movie. And I was just like, that's, like, a real choice of them.
Yeah,
that
that's
you
cool.
Make. That's, like, it puts you in world. It puts you in the setting. And yeah, so there are a lot of little touches like that. So then it was very jarring when like something would fall on somebody's head for me. Or like eventually I was like, okay, we're getting full on. Like eventually it goes pretty full on.
Yeah, yeah. This is a mashup. I see.
It's a Madison. Yeah.
Now I have a. I did a little bit of detective work, and so I was thinking about Robert Smigel, and I was like, you know, it surprises me that this guy would be able to pull off a movie that feels artistic. And I don't mean that against him. I don't know enough about his work to really know for sure, but it kind of felt surprising that like the comic The Insult Dog guy is making a movie that looks like a Steven Soderbergh kind of, like, it looks like a Magic Mike type movie. You know, like it's not perfect, but there's obviously a lot of thought going into these shots and these lighting and things. And so I looked up the cinematographer.
Okay.
Who is Federico Kiska.
Okay.
He's the cinematographer for this movie, and it's the first time that he has worked on a Happy Madison film.
Okay.
And he's a somewhat newer cinematographer. I would say he's probably in his like late 30s or 40s. And I was looking back at all of the other Happy Madison or Adam Sandler movies, and a lot of them were done by Theo van de Sande or Dean Simler, both of whom were born in the 40s. So I find it interesting that here's my theory. The reason this movie looks so good is they have a newer, younger cinematographer trained in a completely different style of filmmaking. Yeah. And the reason all of their movies have really not looked like movies at all to us is because even with a more advanced technology, they are modeled off of a school of film that was really popular back in the 80s when these other cinematographers were really having their heyday. So that's my kind of theory for how this movie looks the way it does.
Right, you learn it and then it becomes like the staple almost. So like they learned how to do really like professional cinematography that is very like effective.
Yes.
But also basically invisible, I guess.
Yeah.
Though maybe it's not invisible. Like, I don't know enough about the evolution of cinematography. But that's my homework for all of our listeners is to tell
me. But no, I think that feels right. Yeah. That feels right.
But everybody loves homework. That it would be and so like they learned how to do it, and so it's actually is probably technically really, I mean, it's technically really good. Like all Hollywood movies are
since like, the beginning of Hollywood movies. Right? Yeah, because like there are
the premier people who know how to do it. Even like somebody working on Happy Madison, but at a certain point, it starts to feel very workmanlike or basically invisible. And here we've got another style that does. But to me, it did feel so much more like naturalistic and just interesting.
Well, it's kind of like we've got the follow-up to a Punch Drunk Love style.
Yeah.
Now, 15 years later, we're getting that, you know, and it's
because that was more, and that was more like we've talked about in maybe the last one. Like, would you call Punch Drunk Love? I don't know if I'd call it art house exactly. I feel like
I don't know what that means. So yeah, let's call it art house.
Okay. I feel like PTA is like it's too big.
Well, have
you heard of this cool underground director Martin Scorsese? Like,
what has he done?
I feel basic at this point for being art house director like P.T. Anderson and Stanley Kubrick. Quentin Tarantino.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
I think at one point he was, and I think with Punch Drunk Love, he was still, like, that was his, well, he had done Boogie Nights, hadn't
he? Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think by that time he knew what he was doing, but even with something like Boogie Nights, I think we could probably draw some comparisons, but it's interesting because I think that style has now become the norm to such an extent that a cinematographer in an Adam Sandler movie might be channeling some of those stylistic choices.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking is like things like this, the style starts on like, I'm sure PTA isn't the absolute cutting edge of like wild underground cinema or something, but he's definitely like bringing that higher, like, auteuristic, like, artistic or whatever, sensibility to it, that then over time gets, like, elements of it get incorporated into the mainstream until we get them doing a similar thing on this the week of.
Yeah.
But I watched a little bit of an interview with Robert Schmeigel right before we were doing this. And now we have to do that every time we mention him in any of these. But
I'm ready.
This, okay, you're just going to do it in this one. So I watched a little bit of an interview with Robert Schmeigel, and I watched a little bit of an interview with Robert Schmeigel, and I don't know, it was just interesting to, like, I bet he's also bringing a little bit of this different sensibility, even though, but just, he's like his own.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, sound like I don't, this is my theory, but
yeah.
It could also be totally reversed, or it could be that they collaborated really closely on it, and that's how it worked out.
He also did the TV Funhouse cartoon shorts on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Schmeigel did, which I think got pretty weird and wild.
They did, yeah.
Like, so, like, he's not just, like, some bozo. And that, I mean, I guess that's the thing to... that's interesting for me, or has become interesting for me, is I end up feeling like that about everybody that works on these movies. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, these people are all artists in their own way, but somehow when they end up working, somehow they end up making Jack and Jill or whatever. But I don't know. It's fascinating to me to be like, but that, like, the, for a while, the pat answer to Adam Sandler is he's lazy and they're just cash-ins and they're just like, let's string a bunch of fart jokes together and make our money. And
we lose that?
Fucking, I don't remember, but
I think so. You got to bring that back.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
But just get our fucking cash and our money and just, like, do that, and we don't care about the art, and we're just like, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it's more interesting to think about, and I don't know, I think more accurate to the people that are actually doing it, not necessarily more accurate to the people that are, like, funding it.
Mm-hmm.
And expecting a return on their investment. But I'm sure they, in their own head, are like, yes, I am funding the arts. Like Adam Sandler movies, and now mostly Marvel movies or whatever. I'm sure they have their own aspirations.
I found this really interesting art house director, Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
He's doing very, very fascinating, cutting edge.
Right.
Filmos.
And, but I find it interesting to think about, like these, they are really working. They're really trying to do something with all the things that they do. And, but I felt that
there's
more
an element of
one.
Respect in your voice, but it's also tinged with amazement.
No, but, like, watching the interview with Robert Schmidt, I felt it more on this movie than some of the other ones.
Yeah, I think
ones.
With, like,
and
somebody, I could imagine that he could have...
like, he loves what he's doing. He's passionate about it. He's really trying. And it's just... so some of it is to my taste, and some of it is not to my taste as a esteemed watcher of art house films, like
The
Week of
and Ridiculous Six.
I
mean, I think also the fact that he probably could have directed a film anytime he wanted between 2000 and 2020 or 2018 when this came out, I think. But you know, definitely, yeah. Okay, I'll give him some more credit than I was initially. I think I was just like, oh, they got one of their buddies to hop on as director and throw in his own ideas, and then really what it was is the new cinematographer. But I think it's a bit of both, and I don't think the cinematographer probably would have been offering up thoughts on, like, the musical choices, so that's a good observation too.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we talked about this.
So one thing in my notes I wrote, these movies are explorations of middle suburban America, chain stores, polo shirt,
mm-hmm.
and khakis, big TVs, cabin trios, and expensive vacations. So I wrote that toward the beginning of the movie, I think, just because I was thinking, so like each one at some point, like it's really, maybe all of them, I guess. Billy Madison feels a little bit more like surreal, or especially like Little Nicky.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, they really locked into Adam Sandler is kind of interested in exploring this like middle American life, like middle class American, like
average
grown-ups movies. And like, if you look at the details, like of the scenes, like it really, like all the clothes that he wears, the preoccupations, the environments that they go to like big chain stores basically, or I don't know. I thought there was something kind of interesting there. So if you want to someday, maybe they'll watch them in the future and they can replicate, they'll have a sense, like when we look at medieval paintings.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Wow, everybody had giant spoons. That's really wild. And people will look back and be like, dang, people, grass didn't grow very tall.
Yeah, wow, the grass really didn't grow. And the Billy Joel was everywhere somehow.
Billy Joel was everywhere.
He was built into the van.
Yeah.
I actually wrote that.
The cars ran on Billy Joel.
No, the world runs on Billy Joel.
That's true.
I thought, I also wrote about the mundane domestic stuff. There's just all this mundane domestic stuff, and then added on
it.
Qualifications.
Would that make us modernists or or not postmodern, but we just love the CIA school of American literature.
We really do. Yeah, just give me that revolutionary road. I would say this is a kind of revolutionary road for the 21st century.
Absolutely.
But I said that there's all this mundane stuff, but it's heightened by all of these strange requirements. Like, my thought is that actually this movie could work if it was just an exploration of, like, the intricacies of our mundane domestic lives. And it wasn't also, like, things falling on people's head, you know, and mm-hmm. people getting lost in, like, the ball pit or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Adam Sandler takes the minivan several times, Rachel Dratch's minivan, mm-hmm. but he's not allowed mm-hmm. to adjust the seat requirement in the minivan.
Okay.
Because she has it just right. And so one thing that I guess is supposed to be funny is that he has to sit really close to the steering wheel. And I just, it's that kind of stuff that you really start to enjoy as you keep watching these movies, that they keep doing these kind of things. I don't know. You have a movie here. You have a compelling movie about this like complicated relationship that is this complicated budding relationship between these two fathers who don't really know each other at all and come from entirely different backgrounds. And it's funny. There are plenty of funny moments in it. Why are you doing this? But I'm asking that in the mirror. I'm like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
I liked the conceit of everybody stuck in the house. So you have like kind of like the mundane of day-to-day life piled on because all of the wedding guests are coming to this hotel that Adam Sandler has done some work previously on, and this is one of the ways he's cutting corners is, oh, we're going to use this old hotel. But it's a really junky hotel. And eventually all of the guests just end up at Adam Sandler's house, and that's where they are all staying. And it's just, you know, probably like 30 or 40 people at one point, like in the house from both sides of the family, just hanging out and living together. That's a great conceit. It feels like, that would kind of have to happen, right? Nobody can afford to stay anywhere else in the area.
Yeah.
So they're kind of just stuck all living together for a little while.
Yeah. And again, that would be like, that's like humor from observation of like everybody, like we have to keep adding people in and find new places for them because like that's kind of what it's like when you're like, oh, everybody's coming for a wedding, and you're scrambling and trying to figure out, like, where do we put people? Or,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be a wedding, but, like, any big family gathering, or, I don't know, there, like, that I felt, I felt like it captured a feeling, a familiar, like, feeling.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's like a song, a Billy Joel song. Yeah, and so, like, again, like, I know we keep going back to this, but that's a different kind of humor, and I think that kind of humor can stand on its own, and could have stood on its own, but most of the Happy Madisons, and this one had more moments like that, whereas most Happy Madisons, the humor is like, for some reason, I have to get on a small motorcycle and race in run into a fence, mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a slapstick. The humor has to be, like, someone getting hit in the balls or hit on the head or...
I will say that was a lot more subdued. Like that, there were several things falling on Uncle Seymour's head, but there wasn't nearly as much of the physical comedy as there might have been.
But there was... Yeah, but there were those Happy Madison moments. There was, like, they go to a strip club.
Yeah.
And, like... The joke wasn't an observation about those kind of places.
Mm-hmm.
The joke was just, look, it's a bunch of, like, middle-aged guys at a strip club who are partying down.
Oh, like, some of them are, like, filming with their phones because they're super creepy. Yeah.
Oh, he's going to, like, put his head in her boobs or something.
Yes,
like,
you know?
Like, and so those moments generally don't work as well for me, but there was one that I did like. Where they had to put a bunch of bats in a office, which was funny.
Yeah.
Because that one went absurd enough. So, like, the strip club doesn't work for me as a joke because the only joke is, like, it's funny that there are strippers.
Yeah, and we're going but, to see them.
Yeah, but there was a bit where they have to, they're trying to wreck a place or
can I give a little context for that moment, because please. that was actually something that kind of frustrated me, not the bat part, but earlier. The whole thing with Uncle Seymour kind of builds up to this moment where they go see the mayor, and he wants to thank Uncle Seymour for his service in World War II, and Kenny's character is like, and actually the mayor just mentioned that he's gonna go ahead and he's going to host a banquet in honor of Seymour, because he's realizing, oh, we can have the hotel at City Hall. And so he says that, like, in the middle of the mayor's kind of announcement to the media on thanking the World War II veteran. And so the mayor's kind of stuck doing that. But then, spoiler alert, sorry, Uncle Seymour does die in the movie. And so then the mayor's like, well, we're not going to have the party at City Hall anymore. He's not even alive anymore. And so they're like, oh, okay, well, now what the problem is that Adam Sandler has already promised his family that they're going to have City Hall and they're going to have the wedding there. Now that's off. So they have to, you can't just be honest with your family and tell them that you lied in the first place and that was really for a tribute to Uncle Seymour. You have to figure out some way of making it impossible to have the wedding at City Hall so no one will know that it was actually canceled on you. Hence... go ahead, Chris.
Oh, so I think the plan, and I think Steve Buscemi maybe is like the idea guy behind here, but they are going to unleash a bunch
of
bats.
But Rachel Dratch, this is a moment where he finally confesses to Rachel Dratch, his wife.
I made this up, and
she's like, I've got this sounds like a perfect plan. The bats.
Yeah.
So she's on it too.
So then they go, what's funny to me about it is that it keeps building, and so they catch the bats. Like, there are multiple points where it's like that could stop and just be it, but they catch the bats, and then they're like, we can't get the bats in there. But I'm trying to remember exactly how it works. I think they try to throw a bag of bats onto the roof or something, and that doesn't work. So Steve Buscemi's like, let me shimmy up. So he shimmies all the way up. And they do. They let bats out. And
into the chimney office. Of the
into the chimney
the
of
city
the
hall,
office.
And he has to like lay over the top of it.
And he has to lay over the top.
He's like,
top
they'll
of it.
Eventually realize they can't get out this way.
Right.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. That is another moment of like, how far can we actually take this?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the observation is in it, if there is one.
That's
but
not.
It's just
I don't
an
think
enjoyable
that's...
moment of like, this is extreme. Yeah. You're taking this to its extreme, and there's something funny about imagining these characters needing to do this.
So that's the typical Happy Madison, I think, done right, because they take it far enough that there is a joke there. I mean, I guess that's what they're always trying to do in their movies.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't think it's funny.
I don't know if our listeners knew that about us, but sometimes these movies in certain ways are not our cup of tea.
Yeah, perhaps. But you gotta give everything a chance, right?
You know, I think my speaking of not my cup of tea, I'll try to be forgiving about this, but I'll just say, as I said earlier, I feel like they had a movie here and then they decided to add another movie to it. Like they had this really cool exploration of these two families and kind of the mundane life and observational comedy. And then they threw on all the kind of a lot of the Happy Madison shtick that we're used to, that we know and love. And I felt like another moment for me where it was like, you had an opportunity to do something here and you just bailed on it, is the end of the movie. So ultimately things kind of work out. Okay. The couple gets married. There are no real villains in the movie, which was one thing I really appreciated. There's no bad guy at all. There's no one trying to sabotage.
For sure.
There's no one trying to backstab. There's no one doing anything. It's hard to plan a wedding, and it's really hard when you have insecurities about money or insecurities about how good of a father you are. And so, you know, the comedy was all based in that. But there's this moment in the final scene of the movie with Adam Sandler and Chris Rock just hanging out on the back porch, on the front porch together, like the morning after the wedding. Like they've stayed up all night, essentially, and they're just kind of like sitting out there together. And I thought, like, you have these two comedians, these two funny people sitting here in this moment of repose. There's nowhere they have to go. There's nothing they have to do. They can just sit and exist together, and they can talk, and it could be funny.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like 3 minutes of nothing, and then the movie ends, and it's over. And it just felt like such a letdown to, like, I felt like it was constantly building to this moment of, like, okay, finally that's over. Now they can, like, kind of see each other together and exist in the same space together, and what kind of comedic energy is going to come out of this. And it turns out the answer was none.
Yeah. We're going to go with another moment.
Oh.
Actually, at the end, which is where, so this was like, I'm trying to remember it, but he has this heartfelt moment. There's also a subplot where Adam Sandler's character is like, he's worried about letting go of his daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like giving her away. She's going to be a grown up. She's going to be married. He's not going to be the only central force in her life play as big of a role, and he wants to give everything to her and all this stuff about that. And then so he's like, I think he gives her like a little talk about that, or they have like a moment where they acknowledge that, and it's touching. And then he's like, okay, I need to play the tape your grandmother your grandmother left you, because she said play this on your wedding. I guess the grandmother had passed.
Yeah.
And so they play this videotape of the grandmother singing a song, I think. I'm not sure what song it was, but the grandmother is Adam Sandler in drag, right?
Yeah.
Like grandma drag. And he's doing a funny voice, and he's going, it's just like, man, I know that this is a comedy, and like that's what people came to see, I guess, but like, that was a part where you could have let it be.
Yeah.
Again, like you could have let, even though it's a little sentimental. But this movie, like, Yeah, I don't know. And, like, sometimes movies are too sentimental for me. So, like, you can't win with me. I guess just the movie that I came to see, like, I'm just, like, the part I'm most invested in was just more of, like, a family story.
Yeah.
And, like, I could have just had... And, like, I know I'm not going to get something too deep. So, like, I'll buy... If I'm going to buy in at all, I'll just buy into, like, some kind of sentimental family stuff. But then they didn't even, like, let that
rest. I mean, I can imagine a scenario where Kenny puts in the tape and it's Adam Sandler playing Grandma Drag and it is funny. I can imagine that. It just didn't do any. I mean, like, it was like this sense of like, oh, we've
that was the only joke
built
too,
up
I
to
think.
This, and look who it is. It's Adam Sandler still. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not doing anything particularly funny. It's just he's wearing a wig. I mean, I think it's like I've seen that with Mrs. Doubtfire. You know, if you're gonna do it, you gotta top that. You know.
Right, and how can you top Mrs. Doubtfire?
I don't think
Good
you
God.
Can. I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Man, Robin Williams, the third Robin Williams, or the fourth Robin Williams podcast would be a good one.
That would
That's
be a good
untapped
one, yeah.
Territory.
Mm, yeah.
The fourth.
Through three has certainly been.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just mean the fourth.
And, yeah, for the fourth one.
Yeah, in some ways, like, this also, like, a lot of the objects of humor are your run-of-the-mill objects. I don't think we have, like, a lot of the run-of-the-mill people are your objects of humor is what I mean to say. Like there's a teenager who has like substance abuse issues and has been in rehab and so there's like this ongoing joke about him like kind of being a kleptomaniac but also having really bad kind of anxiety and a lot of triggers. There's like the hotel staff, this like I don't know where they're from, but you know, clearly meant to be, you know, not native to the United States, and like the way that they talk and communicate with Kenny at various times just feels like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be funny because they're like, oh yeah, they're the stereotypical hotel staff that like doesn't really know what's going on or like what you want. I mean, I felt like Uncle Seymour, like the whole idea of it being an amputee, they get a lot of mileage out of the fact that like, oh, he's an amputee and he needs like help going to the bathroom or he needs carry inside or he gets lost in the ball pit or
also he's an old man who's horny, I think.
Yeah
part that's of the joke.
That's well that's
he wants
always
to see some,
funny
some
but
strippers
yeah that's really always funny but the other stuff it was like man yeah
right I'm glad we made that distinction.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, I mean, is there much more you want to talk about with this bad boy?
Not really. What are we looking at time wise
53:51.
Holy smokes, we gotta find 20 more minutes.
Okay, I think I can do it. Let's look at who catered. Cater Watch.
Oh my goodness.
Hey.
Yeah, I mean, there's other random parts I liked or whatever, but I think now's a good time to maybe see if we recommend it, and then do you want to check the email?
Yeah, that sounds good. So you tell me whether you would recommend it, and then by that time, I'll be able to tell you there are no emails.
Okay, sweet. I feel like it was there were parts of a kind of good movie here. And there was also, it was like a Spanglish movie.
Mm-hmm.
So like not too out there, but like good and just like let's just watch a movie that's just like a story that is something kind of probably a little bit relatable. So that has some interesting choices in it. With a cast of people that we enjoy watching. That was all there. And then there were the typical Happy Madison stuff like laid on top of that. So, so yeah, why not? I don't know.
So you're going to recommend it?
Yeah, sure.
Oh my God. What?
I think I recommend that at all of them.
Oh, no, do you? Not. What is, which day is this one for you?
Which day of the week?
Yeah, you know, it's a kind of like a Monday morning, woke up.
It's not a morning movie.
Got to get ready for work, but you want to pop in a TV show and just...
No, you know, it's not a morning movie. It's a movie... No, it's a movie that you are at a family... You're, like, staying with... You are yourself at, like, maybe a wedding... Or at some kind of family thing where you're, like, staying with...
This feels right. This feels right.
Your cousins, maybe?
Distant cousins.
Like, yeah.
Second,
or like,
third,
yeah, yeah.
Once removed.
And you're, like, okay, so you're all in, like, the living room. And you're all, like, the cousins and maybe some uncles and aunts.
And then you're, like, hey, I do like, a podcast. Do you guys want to watch the most recent film? I know it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, for sure. Thanksgiving, perfect. Do you guys want to watch this movie mostly so you can listen to my podcast afterwards?
Or should we just do the podcast right out? You know,
yeah, we could,
if you
yeah.
like the podcast, then you'll love the movie.
Yeah. No, I feel like it's a movie you could put on then and people would, because it's got something for all types.
I think that's right. Yeah.
That yeah,
sounds
that
right to me.
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah, that's great. Now, my follow-up question would be, do I recommend it?
Oh, yeah.
And
I don't think you do, but...
I don't think I do either, but yeah. I like this idea of just recommending it and finding the time that you would watch it. But then I'm like, well, you know when you're really hungover and you don't want to do anything or think about anything? Try an Adam Sandler movie.
Try literally any of these movies.
Yeah. So I don't know that I could recommend I'm gonna say I can't recommend it, nor can I recommend setting up an email address for your listeners to email you, because they never do.
Because they don't.
They never do. But you know what?
Yeah.
Years from now, I'm gonna wake up, roll over, check my email as I normally do, and I'm gonna see a message. I don't know who that message is going to be from, but man, it's going to feel good.
It just feels good to get an email.
It does. It does.
You're like, wow, somebody was thinking about me.
It's
kind of like the new form of letter.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
Actually, we did get a couple emails.
Okay.
Help strengthen the security of your Google account.
God, okay.
Hey, Justin.
Yeah. Oh.
And then security alert. New device.
Okay.
And
we don't need to.
Hey, Justin, sorry. Yeah. So what's up next for the Adam Sandler?
We got to do Hotel Transylvania, the summer vacation one, which we said we were going to do last time and then we didn't.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
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 And
well, Halloween passed, right? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Halloween passed, yeah. So yeah. We'll probably wait till summer to do that, but stay tuned.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, it'd be a fun Christmas one, right? Night Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we have Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation, which would make sense to hold off till summer, but...
Yeah.
Why did we think we were going to do that
for Halloween
anyway?
We were going to? I don't know.
Are we going to do Adam Sandler 100% Fresh?
Is that his stand-up?
Yeah.
Does he have other stand-up movies?
I don't think so. I mean... Not like listed in his filmography, so maybe this could be one for listeners if they want us to. Just go ahead and shoot us an email at 4aspodcast@gmail.com.
You're just trying to trick them.
It's the number 4 and the letters AS and then the word podcast@gmail.com. No,
they made it clear they do not want to email us.
if one person emails,
yeah, I think maybe I want them to listen. Oh, wait a minute, I'm not.
We need to figure out like some kind of stunts, you know, like if one person emails us, we will like record our next episode. I don't know. I have no ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got, I say we skip the stand up unless somebody really wants it. But after that, murder mystery.
Dude, we gotta go back and do like Airheads and shit too.
Oh yeah. Well, then we have Uncut Gems, finally. We get to see that, which we've been waiting on for 2 years.
Or when does that, how far down the line is that?
That's third in the queue. We've got Hotel Transylvania, Murder Mystery and Uncut Gems.
Okay, Murder Mysteries first. Okay. Yeah. Murder Mystery might be... is that Jennifer Aniston again?
I believe it is. Is that the third Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah.
That's the third Jennifer movie with Jennifer Aniston as the co-lead? I think it's third.
I really want to say that it's third. A trio with Aniston and a three-peat with Drew.
You think that's right? This is just the second one?
I think he has done a trio, a three-peat. But what was it?
I don't know, but we don't have to worry about that now, I suppose. We're at an hour.
Oh, God.
Shit. All right. Okay, let's signing just... off. Until next time. Hibbity-dibbity.
We got to talk down the running order. Where's the magician?
We have a magician?
Yes, we do, honey. He's great. He goes table to table.
He's going to double as the MC, too. He does it all.
Kenny, did you ever ask Sarah if she's good with a magician?
What? Now she doesn't like magicians?
Oh, here's Ken.
Apologies, folks. Is this the bride?
Yes.
Ah, pleasure. Oh,
fantastic. You see what I mean, huh? Ken, take him through the night.
Cocktails. I'll be going around with light stuff. Cards, coins, foam balls. Keep it simple.
Wait. Magic during the cocktails?
Well, you want people to stay interested, right?
What, you think they're gonna be bored?
I don't know. It's a fast-moving world out there. You got computers, cellular telephones.
May I continue?
Yes.
Wedding, photos, reception line. Folks, if you find your way to your tables, crowd work. Is this your card, madam? Boom, cheers. Who's the next victim? Laughs. Oh, I see you've forgotten this. Pulls card from pocket, screams. Sir, I see you really love your queens. Big laughs. And now for the real stars of our show, Q Band.
DJ.
Q DJ. Yes. Introduction, bridesmaids, groomsmen.
We're gonna come out in pairs.
And who's this?
This is the bride's best friend. We choreographed an entrance. It's gonna be to Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Right?
So obvious. You gotta love it.
Yes, I can't.